Hello again, everyone. Thank you for those who have joined us for your patience. I think we should go through and check in. So should we go state by state? I know Shoko's with us from Oklahoma. Is there anyone else from Oklahoma with us?
No, it's just me today.
Okay. How about anyone from Illinois?
Yes, hi Beth, it's Kelly, and I know Peggy's going to be joining us shortly.
Super, great to hear from you, Kelly.
You too.
All right, how about Wisconsin? No one? Okay, how about Ohio? Anyone from New York?
Yep, Bonnie Cohen and others will be joining me.
Okay, super, thank you, Bonnie. How about Maine?
Yes, Georgiana Prudhomme from Crossroads for Women.
Great. Thank you, Georgiana. How about South Carolina? No one from South Carolina. How about Florida?
This is Polly Ryan.
Hello, Polly.
Hi.
And, oh, my goodness. Mark?
Iowa.
Iowa. Anyone from Iowa?
Lonnie Cleland.
Hi, Lonnie.
Hello.
All right. Did I miss anyone? I know we'll have some people joining us shortly. So I'm going to hand it over to Mark, who's going to give us an introduction to the call, and he will introduce our first speaker, and we can go ahead and get started. Mark?
Thanks, Beth. Welcome, everyone. The topic of this month's State Leadership Intercircle Call is collaboratives. And looking forward to the STAR-SI essential expiration in about a year from now, we thought and we've heard from a number of people that it would be good to begin to discuss and provide some exposure of different collaborative experiences out there, different collaborative models of different sizes and scales, different implementations that NIATX has been involved with, so that states have a little bit deeper understanding of how they can continue to foster process improvement and continue to build a capacity throughout their states to do process improvement beyond the life of the STAR-SI grant. And so we've invited a couple of people who are experienced in setting up collaboratives. Payer and provider collaboratives in different locations outside of the STAR-SI network, and we've asked them to share that experience here today. And for starters, we're going to have Beth Rakowski, who's the Associate Director of Training at the UCLA Integrated Substance Abuse Program. And Beth is also an epidemiologist at UCLA and works with the Pacific Southwest ATTC. So we've asked Beth to be here today to discuss a pilot project she has established and continued to work with in LA County. So Beth, with that, I'll sort of turn it over to you to share your experiences.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Hi, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Right. Good. So Mark, like Mark said, he asked me to come on the call today to tell you about a two-phase pilot project that we've done in Los Angeles County. And now it's not, essentially, it's phase two was an expansion of phase one. It was with different providers. So what I'll do is I'll speak mostly to the phase two project, which actually just ended last month. What it was through our work with the Pacific Southwest Ejikson Technology Transfer Center, we were initially approached by CSAT a few years ago with a small amount of money to conduct a small demonstration project in Los Angeles County with contracted providers. And so CSAT funded the phase one pilot. We worked with six agencies from across Los Angeles, all of which were contracted through the LA County Department of Public Health through their Alcohol and Drug Program Administration. And we set forth to implement a year-long demonstration project. Essentially, what we did was it was voluntary. So the agencies volunteered to be part of the pilot. They were not compensated in any way for their participation in terms of money. They did get a whole ton of free training and technical assistance, but they were not given any money to implement NIATX at their agency. So what we did is we, in terms of the model we used, we partnered with the University of Wisconsin, with the NIATX NPO, and we had Steve Gallen, who was our NIATX coach. So we had a series of, we started off the pilot with an informational session where we essentially invited every contracted provider from throughout the county to a meeting. Now, just to give you a little bit of context, there are approximately 350 contracted programs in Los Angeles County. In terms of the number of agencies who are contracted, there's about 120 agencies. And so we invited executive directors from each of those agencies to a meeting, and we ended up having about 40, probably 40 representatives from throughout the county, or 40 agencies were represented at the meeting, where we just spent, we had Steve come in, and he gave a half-day orientation to NIATX and process improvement, and essentially said, you know, who seems interested in using this model in your agency. From there, we had six agencies volunteer for phase one. So we brought them together for an orientation meeting. Again, it was a half-day meeting specifically focused on, specifically focused to the executive sponsors and the change leaders. And we did, again, a little orientation to NIATX. We gave them some pre-work in way of conducting a walkthrough and collecting some baseline data. We actually had them collect data on all four of the aims, even though they were only going to focus on one of the aims initially. And so that was done over a course of a few months. The project officially kicked off with a day-long, we called it a day-long kickoff workshop, where we invited the entire change team from each agency to the session. Todd Mulfenter and Steve Gallen co-facilitated the session, and it was basically a day-long, you know, how to implement NIATX. So following that, Steve and I did a series of site visits. We did one site visit to each agency where we spent a half a day with the agency, with the change teams, going over the data collection tools, talking a little bit about their initial change projects, troubleshooting if some agencies were having trouble getting started. And then from that point forward, we were in the official implementation phase where we had a series of monthly conference calls. We had change leader calls and executive sponsor calls, but they were really open to everybody, where we talked about provider progress. Each month we highlighted one or two providers who are part of the collaborative. They told us what their progress was to date. It was a chance for us to touch base, to give them updates on, you know, upcoming events and, you know, what to expect next. We also had one face-to-face change leader meeting about halfway through the implementation phase, where we invited mostly the change leaders, but we allowed them to bring additional representatives from their agency. And again, it was a chance for us to celebrate some interim success. Each agency was given a chance to describe what they had done so far and, you know, sort of what they were thinking that they were going to do next. And then the project officially ended with a completion conference where, again, we brought the whole change team together. We did a series of oral presentations. We had each agency put together a storyboard. So we had a whole poster session set up. And it really was, the primary purpose of the conference was to celebrate success. And it was also to provide the county with some suggestions on next steps, because we knew that the county was interested in doing a phase two of the pilot, but we weren't too sure what they were going to focus on. So flash forward to about a year, we implemented phase two of the project, which was essentially we used the same model as we used in phase one. We expanded it to include, there were eight agencies with 13 teams in total. So several of the agencies had two change teams operating in different locations. Two of the agencies were repeaters from phase one, so we allowed them to come back and join us for phase two, because, again, it was all voluntary. So we thought, hey, the more the merrier. The funding was a little different for phase two. The county, Los Angeles County ADPA, funded the project. So they paid for Steve Gallen's coaching time. They paid for the face-to-face meetings, the conference calls. The funding also paid for one person from each agency was given a travel scholarship to go to the NIATX Summit this past, when was that? June.
We were on mute, sorry.
That's okay. So we had one agency rep from each agency went to the NIATX Summit, really because we wanted them to get as much as they could from being part of the pilot. We focused a lot more. One of our biggest lessons learned from phase one was the importance of monitoring data And because it was, you know, because it was our first attempt at doing at setting up a collaborative, and the agencies, while they're used to collecting data for administrative purposes and for, you know, the standard, you know, reporting purposes for the county and the state and the national, you know, TEDS and all that, TEDS and NOMS, they weren't too up to speed on how to collect NIATECH type data. So we learned a lot from phase one in the way that the agencies really needed a lot more technical assistance on how to set up their data collection systems and how to monitor the progress of their changes over time. So there was a much greater focus in phase two on data quality. In phase one, I essentially managed the project. I was the primary point person for everything. So I reviewed the data each month. I was sort of the go-between the agencies and Steve as the coach. And I found that with phase two, because the county was funding the project, it made sense that someone from the county sort of be my counterpoint and have a major role in data. Since the agencies are already responsible for submitting data on a monthly basis to the county, it made sense for someone from the county to be responsible for reviewing the NIATECH data. And that seemed to work really well. So my colleague from ADPA, her name was Alex Brule. She was responsible for receiving the information on a monthly basis, and then we worked together to review it. And what we found is that the quality overall was much better in phase two. And as time went on within phase two, the monthly reports that they were submitting were getting better and better. And we also we found that even though we focused more on data up front, so during that initial kickoff workshop, we actually had a breakout session where we went through the change project report form and a client-specific tracking worksheet. We went through that in detail. But we found that even though we spent much more time on it initially, there were still lots of questions. So an additional feature of phase two was we scheduled in July, so it was about 3 months into implementation, we scheduled some one-on-one conference calls with each change leader to go over data, basically to assess, you know, how they were doing, if they were having any trouble on their end, you know, just really encouraging them to improve the quality of the information that they were submitting. And from those calls forward, we saw some drastic improvements in the quality of the information. We actually just finished the second phase of the pilot. We had our completion conference on October 20th, and we're in the process now of receiving the final set of data from each of the agencies, and then I'm going to go ahead and write up a final report. And we're also going to prepare a manuscript for publication based on our phase one and phase two experiences. Because we learned a whole lot about how to, you know, organize a collaborative with a little bit of funding. Like I said before, none of the agencies were compensated for their participation, so they truly volunteered, and they were able, you know, in a very short time, they were able to have some pretty drastic improvements in the quality of their services. In terms of the aims that most of the agencies focused on, most of our agencies in phase one looked at either no-shows to assessment or continuation. In phase two, we had at least one agency focus on all four of the aims. So we did have an outpatient agency focus on admissions. They were a very small program. They only had one site. They were having a big problem getting clients in the door. So they worked on increasing their admissions. We had a couple of agencies focus on waiting time from first request to assessment. And then the other agencies mostly focused on either overall 30-day continuation or some agencies looked specifically at, you know, increasing session-by-session attendance. So that sort of has been our experience with setting up a collaborative in Los Angeles County. In terms of some of the key ingredients for success, I would say one of the biggest is having someone devoted to reviewing the data. Of course, having committed providers, especially since they weren't paid for their participation. Steve's role as our NIATECH coach was huge. I mean, he really had he had the voice of experience. He was able to bring so much to the table, and people really saw him as an authority. So they looked to him for guidance, and Steve and I worked very closely, and I learned a ton from him in terms of how to, you know, help coach the agencies. And he made himself readily available, which was important. Agencies felt as if they could contact either he or I at any time to get assistance. The technical assistance piece was pretty huge, and luckily through our ATDC, that's like one of our missions, so it made sense for our ATDC to be involved in this endeavor. And yeah, having the, I mean, the county basically in phase one, they sort of sat back and wanted to see how things went. Not that they were skeptical that it was going to work, but they didn't know. You know, it was so new to them. And so they kind of sat back for phase one and watched what we did. And when they saw, you know, when they came to the completion conference after phase one and they saw how successful the you know, the small group of agencies was in, you know, improving their no-shows and improving their continuation, they saw the utility of the using the model as a tool for agencies to improve their services, and then they put their money where their mouth was. So for phase two, they actually funded the pilot. So having them as an active partner made a big difference. They sort of have more, they have authority over the programs. We don't as a university. And it really, I think it helped to lend a little more credibility to the whole project, having them be part, you know, an active partner. And just kind of as an aside, I know this isn't the focus of what I was going to tell you about today, but the work that we've done in Los Angeles has sort of informed all kinds of other work in California. And so UCLA and the HEDC is involved in all kinds of cool projects throughout the state where we're using what we learned in our LA pilots and trying, you know, experimenting with different models to disseminate NIATX, depending on how much money we have for it, in several instances. And I believe Kim Johnson is going to tell you a little bit more about one of our other collaboratives. But in some cases, we're doing things completely unfunded, so we don't have a single dollar to use towards implementing NIATX. But providers are interested in the state; they really want to learn how to use NIATX and so they're willing to be part of these endeavors without, you know, receiving any sort of compensation for being part of it. So sorry that I ran through that so quickly, but I didn't want to take up too much of your time.
Great. Thanks, Beth. Are you welcome to take questions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Certainly. Well, fire away, anybody. If you have a comment or a thought or a question to...
This is Bonnie Cohen in New York. Were all of these providers outpatient clinics?
Good question. In phase one, there we had one residential agency. So six of the change teams were outpatient and one was residential. In phase two, we had, we had four residential programs and the rest were outpatient. We actually, one thing I didn't mention is for phase two, initially we had a methadone program that was part of the beginning part of the project. They came to the orientation, they came to the kickoff workshop. When we went to do their site visit, we realized that they, organizationally, they were in the process of merging programs, and they were doing a lot of, like, physical renovation to their agency, to their main site. And things were a little chaotic, and it just wasn't the right time for them to embark on a process improvement project. They needed to get themselves stable before they were able to do it. So they sort of bowed out of the project. So we ended up having, like I said, four residential programs, and the rest were outpatient.
But the residential program still looked at the same aims, chose projects, same aims, or did they look at other things?
No, they looked at the same aims. Most of the residential programs ended up looking at retention, and by 30-day retention. One of the residential programs, they operated on a waiting, they had a waiting list all the time because of funding, and so they were interested in looking at how to keep the people on their waiting list engaged while they were waiting to get into treatment. So they had some, you know, they did some things around they did daily phone calls with the people on their waiting list just to check, maybe not daily, but they were regular check-ins to see, you know, how the people were doing, were they still interested in receiving treatment from their agency, and then they looked at, you know, what percentage of those clients who were on the waiting list ended up coming into treatment once a bed was available.
Beth, this is Kim. I just wanted to let you know I'm on.
Oh, hey, Kim. Oh.
Hi, Kim. Super.
Hey, Beth, I had a question, sort of a curiosity, I guess. What sort of response or feedback did you hear from the providers in relation to their experience? You know, things that, you know, sort of changed about, I guess I'm mostly interested, did they feel like there was sort of a culture change within their organization towards process improvement, and are they sort of still wanting to be part of peer sharing networks and clamoring for ongoing calls? What's sort of the feedback you've been hearing?
Yeah, in terms of our phase two feedback, there several of the agencies commented on the fact that they did have a pretty huge culture, you know, shift in culture in terms of, you know, finally they were, for the first time it seemed, they were given the authority to make changes, and, you know, management supported them throughout the process. They got a kick out of that. They got a kick out of being able to experiment and try some new things out. And knowing that if they, you know, if what they chose to do didn't work very well, they could just, you know, they could adapt what they were doing or, you know, abandon it and start something new. Another huge thing, we had a lot of our agencies were fairly unsophisticated in terms of data, and in a lot of instances, the person who was responsible for monitoring their data and submitting it to us on a monthly basis, at the beginning, they were terrified. They were terrified of data. They were so scared they weren't going to do it right and that they were going to make mistakes. And those people who were the most fearful at the beginning were like the hugest advocates of data at the end. You know, they were so excited to be given, you know, to have these tools, you know, and it was really simple. It was the change project form that you all use in Star SI is the same form that we use for the LA pilots. It's user friendly, and we gave them a lot of assistance on how to standardize their language on all, you know, specifically on page one and two. And then the client specific worksheet tracked data on all four of the aims. So even though they might have been focusing on waiting time, if they wanted to, they could track their clients over time, like through, we gave them the ability to track their clients through like the first 4 months of treatment. And so when the time came for them to maybe shift and look at another aim, they already had some baseline data because they had been collecting it. So it was neat for them to have just some tools to be able to use. So overall the feedback we got was pretty positive. Several agencies said that they were willing to continue on without any regular support. So they say they're going to keep doing this once now that the project officially ended. And because we have so much other work occurring throughout the state, there are potential opportunities for them to jump on other types of conference calls and be part of other activities that are happening in California. And we kept reminding them that they, for within the state, they were really the innovators. They were the ones who stepped up and said, "Hey, I want to try this out before anybody else." So we kept sort of giving them that message that they were really leading the state in trying out, trying to implement NIATX in their agencies. And I think that helped a lot, just for them to see that they were the first, you know, cohort really in the state who was looking at this.
Great. Well, thank you, Beth. Are there any other questions for Beth? Okay, well.
Beth, stay on. Are you going to get off the phone? Because I wanted to bring up Sonoma County, too, and I didn't
know
I'm
here.
Get the talk. Okay.
I'm here for the whole time.
Super.
Good. Yeah, good to hear you, Kim. Thanks much, Beth.
Yep.
So now what we'd like to do is introduce, or I'd like to introduce Kim Johnson. I'm sure most, if not all of you, are aware of Kim being the NIATX Deputy Director. She's the Director of the Action Campaign as well, and we've invited her here today, or invited her on this call today, to share a little bit about some of the collaboratives that she's been helping establish and been working with throughout NIATX to, again, continue to enhance and give you all a little bit more understanding of the different variations and scales of collaborative models that NIATX has been working on. So, Kim, take it away.
Sure. So, I'm sorry that I missed the beginning of the call, and I'm not sure, is anyone from Illinois or Florida on the call?
Yes, Kim, hi. Peggy and Kelly are on from Illinois.
Okay, great.
This is Polly, Kim. I'm on from Florida.
Okay, good. So I'm going to ask you guys all the talking, not just do all the talking myself. But the campaign, well, let me start with just in terms of Star SI and how we sort of see that, and then how we see the other pieces like the campaign fitting with Star SI and helping to carry that work forward. So, the project that you're all involved in really to some extent was the model for the payer-provider partnership, the state and the provider partnership. And we feel like that's been a very successful model in terms of the learning collaborative aspect of that. So having the state participate with the providers in a learning collaborative, which is pretty intensive. I mean, the way that you guys are working is pretty intensive with all the coaching and the regular meeting, et cetera. And so we feel like that's been very successful. And the campaign kind of drew from what we had learned in all of our grant programs. So from Pathways to Recovery through STAR-SI and Advance in Recovery and all of the grant programs. And what is different, I guess, about the campaign from either what Beth is talking about in LA County or from what you all are doing is it's significantly less intense. There is no coaching. And what we've done is instead of teaching process improvement, we've identified specific changes that that all of your providers all over the country have done in more than one place and had success at. And so we tried to pick things that were both easy to do, relatively easy to do, and that had pretty strong positive outcomes. So we identified specific change projects as opposed to teaching people how to change. And so what we've been doing since, Florida, I think you guys are first, Polly. I forget when we had the first call, but it was in the June, maybe, May or June.
Yeah. We met at the tech conference.
Yeah. So we've been trying to set up learning collaboratives based on the campaign, and the original thought around that was, in particular, to help the STAR-SI states do spread. But it's gone beyond that at this point, and we really think that the learning collaboratives are the key to actually making the campaign be successful. So they're in a different place in every part of the country that we're having them. So we started with Florida and Illinois, started right away. And I haven't been on an Illinois call for a while, so you guys are going to have to say where things are at this point. In Florida, we haven't had anything in August, but we're going to have a conference call meeting early next month. And then there's Sonoma County that Beth is actually doing all the work on, and I keep trying to get on calls and keep not making that work. So these collaboratives are based on the campaign, based on the specific activities in the campaign, and one of the things that we think is key to make them successful is to have some, at least one or two people, whether they're someone like Beth or whether they're providers in the STAR-SI states that know the process improvement stuff very well to help move these learning collaboratives along. So, I would like you guys, because since I have all the right people on the phone, rather than me describing where things are, if you all from Illinois and from Florida, and if Beth, if you wouldn't mind talking about Sonoma County, if you could all just sort of describe where those groups are and maybe a little bit about how they are, because they are different. They aren't as, the word I want to use, they aren't as advanced or scaled as the STAR-SI providers are in terms of their ability and knowledge because they just don't have the same level of support. So I don't know, I don't know which one of you, well, I'll just pick one. Illinois, if you folks could talk about, you've been having monthly calls for what, maybe 6 months, 5 or 6 months now?
This is Peggy. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, this is Peggy Alexander. Yes. We have collaborated with IATA, and at the Florida meeting, we kind of got together with some providers, and we decided that we would invite all of the action campaign providers to everything that we have that we're doing in STARS Eyes. So we invite them to our learning collaboratives. We've also had a Change Leader Academy that a couple of the providers have come and participated with. And I believe IATA has taken the lead on that action campaign. And they have had maybe three or four calls, and they are like specific calls, like we are doing AIMS. And if we had known we were going to say something, I would have probably looked up at us information a little clearer. But we decided to kind of have our focus different from STARSI. I think when we solicited for our year three providers, we also used the action campaign, and we do have two providers that came out of the action campaign. So we are still collaborating with them, and year three will be spreading, and we anticipate using the action campaign providers with that spread and going through the state with Change Leader Academy and using the action campaign providers.
So I'll tell you all the mistake that I made in Illinois, and I learned not to repeat this, because we had our first call with IATA and the action campaign providers. I don't remember when it was, but we had 12 or 13 providers on that call, and I wanted to get them moving on Change right away. So we had the conversation about what a learning collaborative was, and we discussed the possibility of doing a walkthrough, and then we agreed that we'd do a walkthrough in the next month, talk about it. Well, the next month, I think we had four providers on the call, and I'm really think it's because the others didn't get around to doing the walkthrough. So I sort of stuck with it. I should have figured it out at that point in time, but I didn't. So I stuck with it, and then we had so from the walkthrough, we identified a change, and we said, okay, let's all make this change. And then on the next call, I think we had two people. So we quickly reorganized ourselves, thinking, okay, we have to back up because the action campaign providers don't have all of the experience and knowledge and training that the STARSI providers do. And so in Illinois, the calls have mostly been on specific topics that are of interest to the providers, and we've backed away a little bit from immediate action, but then worked with Peggy and the state and the STARSI project to invite all of the action campaign participants to all of those learning opportunities that the STARSI participants have had, and that seems to have things moving along a little better. So we learned from that and know that you can't just leap into action with providers that don't have the training. So in Florida, Polly, we've had a couple face-to-face meetings at this point, and actually, Mark, you did one face-to-face meeting that I wasn't at in August. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you have anything you want to say about what we've done, where we are, where you think we're headed with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that I'm putting you guys all on the spot.
That's okay. I think the intentions in Florida are all real good. I know that we've kind of stalled, I guess, for lack of a better word. But people are ready to get moving on it again. I think there's a definite buy-in by the state, our single state agency. They would like to do something. They've been talking about and promoting a learning collaborative of their own. So this learning collaborative that's directly related to action has to sort of fold into what they, and I'm referring to Stephanie Colston, as you know, Kim, what she has envisioned. And it's a natural fit. It's just a matter of trying to orchestrate that.
Right.
So in the meantime, it's the action directives have sort of stalled a little bit, I'm afraid. But, you know, we do have the active list of people in Florida who who want to do this, and we're real busy with STAR. We have a great efforts going on with STAR SI right now. So
the
Learning Collaborative meeting is set, and I think you're going to speak at that, Kim, and hopefully we can get a little bit more of a directive of where to go next.
Yeah. So Florida has done the same thing as Illinois, basically, in terms of opening up all of the STAR opportunities, the learning collaboratives. Have you guys done a Change Leader Academy?
No, and it's in the works. I don't know, you know, how it's scheduled, but that's something we've requested.
Yeah. So all of that stuff is being opened up to all the Action Campaign participants, too. And in both Florida and Illinois, we're talking about over 50 agencies. So it's been an opportunity for spread in terms of spreading both the word and spreading some of the knowledge. Although, it does take time. I think when you're taught, spread takes time, period, as we all know. And then California is interesting because California is not a STAR SI provider. We have learning collaboratives now going. Let's see if I can reel them all off. We have Florida and Illinois. We have one that has in Arizona that has its first meeting next week. New Mexico has had a couple meetings. I'm leaving somebody out. Oh, Minnesota is going to start next week. And then we have Sonoma County, California, which was sort of an interesting case where the county, they don't have a STAR SI grant, and they didn't have any providers that were really experienced with process improvement, but they had the CAITS training. And Beth, did you talk about that with LA County?
I didn't, not yet.
Okay. So they had basically a PI 101 training, and they had a county director who was very interested and actually wrote into their contract that they had to do NIATICS. And my impression, anyway, was that once I heard this, they weren't quite sure what they meant, what that was going to mean. And so we brought the campaign to them. And Beth, you're going to have to, I've missed two or three calls at this point. So do you want to talk a little bit about Sonoma County?
Sure. Yeah, like Kim said, we, through our ATDC, we've been doing, we have a training series called CAITS, which stands for the California Addiction Training and Education Series. We've been doing the CAITS trainings throughout California since about 2004. In the past 2 years, we've been partnering with CADPAC, which is the Association of our County Administrators. In California, a lot of the decisions as to how funding is going to be allocated is made at the county level, and there's 58 counties in California. So CADPAC is the association of the 58 county administrators. They're one of our main advisory bodies for our ATDC, and they really help us to inform our training agenda for the state. And so basically, they got wind of NIATICS through the work we were doing in LA County, and they thought, wow, this would be great to do statewide. And so for the past three sessions, so we did three sessions in fall of 07, three sessions, day-long sessions in spring of 08, and we're just tomorrow finishing our third group of three trainings. So far we've done nine trainings, and we've trained about 1,000 providers throughout the state. And each of the trainings has a series of six follow-up conference calls. So each month we do, a call on a different topic each month for 6 months. We do one on conducting a walkthrough, one on collection of baseline data, one on establishing a change objective, one on using the Quick Start Roadmap to plan for change. We do a call on the PDSA change cycle, and then our last call is sustainability, which, as an aside, it's way, premature for us to even be talking about sustaining change with these providers, but we want to at least plant the seeds that, once they've implemented some changes, they can decide to sustain change and then move on. So anyway, so Sonoma County, the administrator there was very interested. He supported all of his contracted providers to go to one of the CAITS trainings. And like Kim said, he wrote into the provider contracts that they would have to implement NIATICS in fiscal year 08-09. So you can imagine that, these providers had gone to a day-long training. They barely knew anything about Niatex, and now they were being told, if you want your money, you're going to have to do Niatex in the next fiscal year. And so they freaked out a little bit, and we basically said to them, well, maybe we can help by helping to organize your providers and form a learning collaborative. So in August of this year, Sonoma County has, they have about, just to give you some context, they have about 15 contracted agencies, and several of those agencies operate multiple programs. Some of their providers have upwards of 15 or 20 programs within their agency. And they have a monthly provider meeting. So Gino, who is the administrator there, basically said to Kim and I, okay, I'll give you a slot on our agenda every month, and you come, you call in, and you can help us facilitate a discussion around Niatex. So in August, we actually had a three-hour time block on their agenda. So their whole provider meeting was devoted to just a recap of Process Improvement 101, the action campaign, what is a learning collaborative, all of that. And then since August, we've been having monthly calls with them, and each month they've sort of evolved very quickly, and we just had our November call yesterday, and basically what they did is before I called in, they split themselves up as to which aim they were focusing on, and it turns out that in Sonoma County, the two aims that are most popular are no-shows to admission and retention, or, 30-day continuation. So when I called in, they basically just did a report out of their progress to date. And it's neat because in a very short amount of time, the agencies are learning from one another, and a lot of it, the agencies are hearing, wow, program X did this in their outpatient program. Maybe it'll work in ours as well. And we're getting a lot of dialogue as to, sharing ideas, and it's a collaborative process. It's not competitive in any way, which is surprising because a lot of times these agencies are competing for the same dollars from the county. So the neatest thing about the collaborative is that it's a very collaborative environment, and they really are learning from one another. And my role is just to facilitate the conversation. And, lots of people, people have lots of questions, and so I'm able to answer those questions. But I kind of take a back, I kind of step back and just listen for the most part. And so at this point, we've done a total of four calls. We told them we would do at least six, but I've said a few times that I'll continue with them as long as they want me to. So it's been pretty successful over a very short period of time.
I only was able to hop on the last call, which was yesterday, right, for about 5 minutes. Because the noise was in the background was so loud, no one could hear anybody but the noise in my background. But just so you guys know where this group is at, the question that I heard them ask Beth when I hopped on was about reminder calls, and the clinicians' feelings about we shouldn't have to remind people about their appointments. They should want it enough that they remember. And I don't know if that's how the question was framed exactly, but it was interesting how I thought, oh wow, they're already there, it's an issue that we've all dealt with. Well, all the providers have dealt with in terms of part of the whole process of changing staff attitudes. So anyway, each group is sort of unique and individual, but as you all think about sustaining and spreading once the STAR-SI grant is through, I think the campaign offers the opportunity to do both. I mean, I think it's really important where things are successful is where we have some experienced agencies. Or somebody who's experienced that can be part of that group and respond to questions and sort of help things along in terms of just having some knowledge because the campaign participants are very inexperienced. I mean, I think the other thing that California, that Sonoma County has taught us is that we probably can't just sort of slam the action kits on people's laps and say, here, do this, that some amount of process improvement training is going to be necessary for people to do it effectively. So I guess we've got a few more minutes if people have questions or thoughts about anything.
Hi, Kim?
Yeah?
This is Kristen Jolie from Maine. I'm sorry, I got on late. I had the wrong number. I have a question. I know, I don't know if Linda's on the call or not, but in terms of StarSI and the action campaign, is it, for some reason, I guess I got confused between those being and having to be completely separate as far as a research component. Do I have that mixed up with something else?
Mark, you might want to jump in. I mean, StarSI has an evaluation component, but I don't know that people participating in the campaign would impact that very strongly. So, I think in terms of sustainability in particular, and, well, in Maine particularly, since you have a relatively small group of providers overall, I think in terms of sustainability, the campaign could be very helpful. I do know that a bunch of that we have your providers on the phone periodically. One of them, someone that I know from Maine, will ask a question, so I know they're there.
And Kristen,
Mark,
Word with StarSI and the action campaign is that they can completely blend together and merge together. Certainly, the StarSI initiative is a more involved process where there is a certain amount of required data collection in it. Provider agencies participating in the action campaign, don't necessarily have to have that level of commitment to sort of continue on and play a role. But certainly what we're looking for and what we've heard CSAT urge time again is that spread and diffusion is really a key component of what StarSI should be seeking to establish within a state's system. And so if the action campaign is one way to help assist get the, as Kim mentioned, the training on process improvement out there so that promising practices can be easily picked up and adopted, that's a really key positive outcome of the StarSI program to help make those linkages and include that training.
Right, and it makes complete sense. We did just complete a Change Leader Academy, and it was open to more than just our StarSI, grant agency. So we had several different entities and, other state agencies involved in that as well. I'm just thinking, long-term, as far as some of our agencies that aren't contracted with us for any particular service, but do provide services in the field. I'm thinking in terms of Maine Care contracts and how to involve them in the process. Obviously, we wouldn't have the same level of support, but the cat's out of the bag as far as this really working and serving clients better. So I'm open to doing just about anything to make sure that clients get served to the best of our ability with, the economics the way they are right now. So I was just curious. So thank you for clarifying.
You actually, Crooked River Counseling, I think that's the right name, who I didn't even know about till I was at Niatex. They did a presentation in June, I think it was in June, on the changes that they had made. And their only experience was the campaign. So, I think that was a good example of they had contact with one of the StarSI grantees and learned about the campaign that way and got engaged. And I think the StarSI grantee was a peer mentor, acted as a peer mentor to the director of Crooked River. And so I think that was, it was sort of an idealized kind of model about how that could work.
Yeah, and I know Catherine really well, and I know that she has wanted to be involved and has been involved in the whole process improvement and kind of took it on herself. But we are trying, at least in Maine, trying to get the word out there and having, testimonials from the StarSI agencies and encouraging, our deep providers and our other providers that don't contract with us to collaborate and connect with those agencies who have worked with and done some process improvement. So we're trying.
Well, that's exactly what I think everyone you know, and people are. I mean, I think that's the way to do it. I did want to just say, though, probably, is anyone from New York on the call?
Yes.
Because New York is a special case. New York has both the STAR-SI grant and the research project NIATX 200, and the campaign is not active in New York because that is where there where we were not allowed. And so, Kristen, this might be where the confusion came. In the states where the NIATX 200 research project is going on, the campaign isn't active. We haven't promoted it, and people can't actually sign, providers can't sign up as providers. I know a few have snuck in.
I think that might be it's NIATX 200.
Yeah, which is a research project. Yeah,
and it's in only. That's the one I was confused about.
Yeah, and it's not in Maine. It's in Massachusetts, New York, Michigan, Oregon, and Washington. And so the campaign is not active in those states. And New York has both the STAR-SI and the NIATX 200, so they're sort of a New York special. Any other questions before I know it's almost 3 o'clock?
No. All right. Well, this is Beth at the NPO. Thank you so much, Beth and Kim, for joining us. I think it was really informative and really fits well with where STAR-SI is going in year 3 and following the completion of the grant. So thank you for joining us. Thank you. Everyone who's listening, those were some great questions, and we look forward to hearing from you next month. So thanks, everyone. Take care.